I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
Yeah. What's up? I'm Laura Correnti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia.
Hey, everybody.
So recently, Laura, myself, and Cam,
our producer,
we're down in Key Biscayne, Florida for the Washington Post Next conference. We did a live recording and we had a great conversation with some folks there.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to be front and center with Emilio Garcia Ruiz, who is their managing editor, and Jed Hartman, who is their chief revenue officer, and get the difference in opinion on things like KPIs and the tension that exists between brand experience for readers.
And technology, what they're doing to really kind of push the industry forward and think differently about new products.
So, yeah, we had a great time. So thank you, Washington Post, for hosting us.
And furnishing probably one of the best spicy margaritas I think we've had on the show.
Yeah, we definitely got through the second round, the crown. I think they were very excited.
I have to say, yeah, Emilio definitely hit the second one quickly.
Yeah. So this week in Adlandia, coming back off my visit down to one of, if not my favorite town outside of the tri-state, Austin, Texas.
I have to say something about Austin. I was like totally skeptical of Austin. And then I went down like a couple years ago to visit friends and I went to the Alamo Draft House, fried pickles, get them, watch a movie, crunch, crunch. It's the best thing. In Texas, underrated.
So I didn't have time to get to the Alamo Draft House, but I did spend quite a bit of time downtown, South by Southwest 2017. And one of the big winners I saw, and another reason why I think brands continue or need to continue to show up at these sort of conferences, exposés, whatever you want to call them.
Like the big events, yeah.
Right. Is because it gives people, both in the industry and from a consumer standpoint, a chance to touch the brand.
I love this.
In a way that isn't always accessible through day-to-day interaction.
I also think, to that point, and when we were talking about this when you were down there, I had this moment where I was like, so many brands actually, if they go down or if they're at an event like South By, they actually have the opportunity to strike out and do something different than they would in their full like marketing media mix, right?
It's a chance to experiment, for sure.
And truly innovate. I remember
because it's funny you said it. So because I was talking to a couple of clients down there and it's funny. It's like if there's ever a place to test, whether it's tech, art, science, data, like Austin is the place at South By in particular where all of those things intersect. So it's like, what do you have to lose?
Yeah, what do you have to lose? I agree with that. So, and I love the idea that you're talking about. It was like it's tangible.
Yeah, and you can touch it. And so I'll give you a list of some of the things that caught my eye and some of the things that I heard at the JW Marriott that were some fan favorites. So American Gods is a show on Stars, did this enormous bull. Like, you could not miss this shit.
It was a ball?
It was a huge bull.
B-U-L-L. Bull? I can't tell from your accent.
It was a bull. And it was a show-stopping and arresting experience, whereas Prison Break did this escape room that I actually didn't have a chance to go through, but a lot of my colleagues did and said it was such a unique experience. You felt like you actually got in and around the brand and felt like you were actually on the set, which I think is another way to give people a different perspective. One that I did get a chance to see, which is right around the corner from a place I actually used to bartend, so I know the street very well.
They know you too.
They know me well. Was Breaking Bad's Los Pollos Hermanos set.
I love.
And actually two of the actors, Giancarlo Esposito and Bob Odenkirk, I'm going to mess that up. Thank you. Actually came by. And again, it's this really cool way to, and Austin has such a low-key, casual, low key, kickback vibe. And I think it gives you a chance to see, you know, the celebrities getting into it. But in, again, a very non-Hollywood glamorous way.
It's different this year?
Storytelling.
Because like 3 years ago, mm-hmm. right? It was like lines around the corner.
Oh, there's celebrities
everywhere. But it felt like it was more plugged in, like more amped, and almost like to a point where it got overamped.
Yeah.
And now I feel like
we're over the cliff.
Right? Like some of the foam has come down on the beer and like it's a good drink.
Well, I think that the stars of South By were actually different this year. It was a very politically charged South By. So Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood, was down there talking a lot about how tech stands with Planned Parenthood, which I thought was really interesting.
You took a picture with her.
I did take a picture with her. You can see it on our Instagram.
I liked it.
At Adlandia Podcast. Joe Biden gave a huge talk down there relative to healthcare.
About cancer.
And I would say the star of the show, and I'm not biased because I am a resident from New Jersey, was Cory Booker. He had a keynote. From what I understand, there was overspill. That
standing room only.
Didn't even have an overspill room or overflow, I should say.
You're not talking about me and my jeans.
So I think it was interesting to see a political leader come, and obviously we've talked about politics quite a bit on our show, but all of these worlds are really starting to blur.
I was just going to say, issues, causes, blending now with tech. And I wonder, my question to you was tech as responsive, like the tech crowd as responsive to the politicians, the people like the NGOs, those types of people who showed up.
Well, these organizations know that they need them, right? They need advancements in tech to help scale their causes.
But it's always been that way. I also think
also
like
conversation.
Now tech has to get closer to DC, the Beltway, right?
Yeah.
In a way that they never have. This is a great kind of place for them. To me,
One of the other things that was really cool was podcasting had a presence, I think, for the first time.
And they're still talking though about advertising. I mean, they're which isn't a bad thing, right? I mean, it's early days. It's to say, listen, brands need to start experimenting with podcasting now because it's an easy way in, right? In branded content, in advertising, just straight up advertising. That's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But to get to a really comfortable place where you say, wait a second, what's my brand's value in audio, in these conversational interfaces? When our lives become so programmed, right?
Right.
We tell our Alexa to only order Tide, right? I'm not even kidding. So
if
you're
getting there,
it is getting there. You say, I mean, this is the simple example, right? You say, only order Tide. I don't want to hear about any other laundry detergent.
Definitely. And I think, again, it's early days, but it was just really exciting to see so many great podcasters and people in the podcast industry down at South By. That was a new one. I'll tell you what one of my favorite consumer things of South By was accessories.
Of course.
Everything old is new again is something that I feel like I've said on the last two shows. But pins, like straight up old school buttons and pins.
They've been like, they've been getting really popular.
Total
again.
90s nostalgia. But my favorite thing I came home with was a custom jean jacket that I designed with the ladies of SoulCycle. So it was total badass, like skull and crossbones, jean jacket, Levi's. Hello. I mean,
that's so Ed Hardy.
It was not that kind of skull and crossbones. It was the SoulCycle version. And they had these three young women who were, seamstress artists, and they were hand sewing and stitching these jackets.
What?
So the back of my jacket, if you see a girl walking around
Did
Union
say
Square,
Adlandia? I better say Adlandia.
You know, I thought about it. Maybe that'll be the next one. It says Savage in yellow letters with some cactus patches.
So much sense,
anyhow, it was a lot of fun. I'll tell you who the losers were really quickly. The weather sucked. And the weather totally brings down the vibe in Austin because you just want to be outside and walking around. And
it really does.
Rained,
yeah.
Which leads to my next big loser, car service apps. So Uber and Lyft, for those who don't know, is not in Austin.
Yeah.
So they had these two that were, I feel like, jockeying for like the star of South By from a car service standpoint, Fasten and Fair, and both of them were failing miserably in the rain. And then the last big loser were these panels that feel like a redundancy. Sea of sameness.
Oh, the panel. No, speaking panels.
Speaking panels.
Which is something that you and I have talked about a ton.
I would definitely challenge the industry a bit to reimagine putting four people up on stools that are definitely look so uncomfortable.
I mean, you need some at the end of the day, you need someone to have some point of view on something that they've done, and you need some experience, right? And
I think it's like teaching how this applies to me in the audience.
Well, reason for being there. I mean, for me, what I would love to see is like a redo, a different take on the format.
Let's just
redo a different take on the format.
Agreed.
I don't have an answer. I don't know. We could think about this, though.
We could think about it.
So I think that all in all, you had a good time in South By. You didn't have my fried pickles at the Alamo, but that's okay. You go down there again because you're a hook 'em girl.
I am a Longhorn.
Yeah. Hook 'em. Anyway, we're going to roll into our live record that we did with the Washington Post at the Washington Post Next Conference in Key Biscayne.
We'll be right back.
Shit is about to get so real.
So I'm Laura Carenti.
I'm Alexa Kristen.
And this is Adlandia. So we're super excited to have two industry veterans join us today. Emilio Garcia Ruiz, who is the managing editor of The Washington Post.
And Jed Hartman, the CRO of The Washington Post.
So obviously the industry guys has been talking a lot about your breaking tagline, democracy dies in the darkness. Although, Emilio, after last night, we're convinced that the darkness also brings out the best of democracy after we saw you on the dance floor. So,
yeah. Are you going to shake it?
But we are obviously, like everybody here with us today at the Washington Post Next Conference, enamored with the courage and the bravery it took for a 130-year brand to come out with a tagline. And Alexa and I really just want to know, why now?
So why now is has nothing to do with Donald Trump, although the timing seems to be that way. We began working on a tagline branding thing a couple years ago. And newspaper or publishers, I should say, are terrible at that sort of thing. We're just not very good at marketing. We don't like doing it. And it took us a very long time. We had consultants come in. We had meeting after meeting after meeting. Jed was a part of the process. And we were sort of kind of stuck. And eventually we got to this point where Jeff, in conversations with Bob Woodward, the famed journalist, came back with this democracy dies in darkness thing. And you know, newsrooms in general are very cynical places. So that, as you can imagine, the first reaction was, oh my God, really? What else are you going to come up with? But as time went on, we all sort of grew closer to it. We looked at a lot of alternatives, and nothing quite fit. And finally, we settled on what we settled on that came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Alexa and I have been talking a lot over the last few days since we've been down here in Miami just about, obviously, the news cycle and what it's brought to the surface, which is the credibility of journalism. What we find interesting is this kind of tension between scale versus quality. Is it truly a race to the bottom? Or is there this more important time now than ever to kind of separate yourselves from the pack and start thinking about how you come to the market from a quality standpoint?
Are you speaking about a marketer coming from a quality standpoint or a publisher?
A publisher. But then how do marketers spot you, right, quickly right. doing that? And how do they engage with you doing that?
Sure. So I think it depends on what a marketer's true goals are, with their real KPI and not superficial KPI. Click through. Those are all superficial KPI. No marketers, unless you're an ad tech company, make money on click through. You make money on something else, right? So it depends on your real KPI. To really leverage Washington Post or other publishers, it's to understand what is the audience engaging with? What are they on their own organically? And how does that intersect with a marketer's objectives? And do you look for a sweet spot in there? And then you capitalize it on it, which seems so easy. However, it can be very difficult for a marketer sometimes to leave a core message to get closer to what the publisher is organically engaging their audience with. So it's looking for that, and the onus is on us to find that, and the onus is on the marketer to look for that.
To want it.
And it both of those things are challenges. We have to find the right intersection, but the marketer has to say, I want that intersection. I don't want this just us talking about ourselves to people who may or may not want to hear that. I want to find where it intersects.
So the focus on technology with Washington Post, the focus on new products with the Washington Post, has that made it easier to get to that engagement metric?
Absolutely. 100%.
And how so? I mean,
for many years, advertising has been about the marriage of art and science. You could look at holding companies, websites. It has to be
both. I would argue, though, that there are many new news publishers that would say they're leading for scale because they're relying on tech. We were having this really interesting conversation about the fact that you're tied to this rich legacy of investigative journalism that was born out of the Beltway. Now you've been able to use technology to help scale.
I actually think that's not even giving you enough credit. So this is where I think
you're not even giving us enough credit.
This is the show, right? This is what we do. But like, I actually think that you've thought about journalism and technology together first. It's what's the experience, right?
Yeah, I think you got to go to the evolution of this, right? And my team is tired of me hearing me say this, but for years on one side of the spectrum, you had the traditional publishers, the Post, the Times, the Wall Street Journal, LA Times were over here, and then you had the disruptors come in, right? The Huffington Post, BuzzFeeds, people like that. And so we existed in these sort of parallel universes for a while until we began to learn from them the audience acquisition techniques that work. So how do you make sure your headlines work on Facebook, your Google search terms are right? And all of a sudden, we saw our audiences grow. They, on the other hand, decided, well, wait a minute, we need to do more quality. We can't just be only about scale. So they began hiring newsrooms. BuzzFeed has a pretty large newsroom now. And there is this meeting in the middle that is going to happen. And that is happening now, and I think that's what you're seeing. So the reason we're coming at it from a content point is that that's where we started on the road. Then we learned the techniques, we added the great technology, and we are now sort of ready to rumble. On the other side, what you have is people who are just now learning the journalism, and you've seen with like the problem BuzzFeed had with the document they chose to make public. Journalism's hard. It's just as hard as the technology and the audience acquisition parts were. But
which
they are low and
you
they are growing.
To, just so when our they did
the Trump dossier.
Yeah, when they did the Trump dossier, they made it public. And that was the first time you really saw BuzzFeed take big time heat for a journalistic decision, right? So there is a meeting in the middle. We're getting closer and closer. And here comes the mother of all battles to see who survives. And I don't think everybody's going to be able to survive. I think it's the people that have the best audience acquisition techniques, the best content, and the best technology who are going to succeed. And I think that's why Jeff believes we're so well positioned right now, because of the three, we think we're the best. Final point is, if you go back to October, back to October and you look at what happened, right? This huge story was going on in the country. The election was going nuts. And here we are, the traditional publishers. And if you look at ComScore for October, what happened, right? The traditional publishers, the disrupted, actually kicked the ass of the disruptors. You had us, quote, CNN, and The Times,
right, yeah,
leading ComScore, BuzzFeed, and HuffPo below. What happened? What happened was the story became so important and so big that that's what you had to have, and we just had it better.
Alexa and I did some homework between last night and this morning just about bring this back to the IP.
So your partnership with Storied Media Group, can you talk about like IP and now how it's more important because of technology?
So for years, if you worked in a newsroom, you had this experience. We would write a story, and then the phone would ring, and it would be somebody claiming to be a producer in Hollywood. And they would say, I saw your story on X. I would like to buy that story. And we all would go, okay, you're going to buy the story. We already wrote the story. Why do you want to buy the story? And then they would say, no, we want to do the rights to the story. We want to make a movie or make a TV show out of that. And we're like, okay, what are you going to give us? And, you know, they'd say $4, and we'd say, okay, we'll take $4. And that was it. And off they went. And maybe it got made, maybe it didn't. Maybe they reached out to the reporter, maybe they didn't. It just sort of happens. There was a guy, smarter than me, unfortunately, in Hollywood who'd been an agent for a long time, who said, wait. Every day, publishers are creating this unbelievable amount of content. I'm going to hire a bunch of people who are going to sit in my office, and they're going to go through all of the publisher's content. They're going to take that content, they're going to put it into a giant database, and they're going to make the database based on different types of stories. So a story about a single woman overcoming long odds, story of troubled family, story of refugees, story of whatever. And they're going to create this sort of giant matrix of all the content being created in the country, and they're going to flip it, and they're going to say to Hollywood, hey, you need an idea for something, come on in.
Do you think the brands have a right to play in that with you?
Do they have a right to play in it with us? I think they do have a right. I think the reason I'm up here
More
and the reason
how.
I come to this
yeah,
event
how.
Is that we need to explore this, right? We need to open this dialogue. So we now have these companies representing us in Hollywood. And they are going to sell our stuff. We talked earlier about the butler. The butler was a story that ran in the Washington Post that a producer read that made that phone call. And next thing you know, it became a movie that I think Oprah did, right? She produced it, her folks. So this happens all the time. So what else can we do with our IP so that we do more than just the one article? Let's try to redefine it and let's make it far more effective. Sharpen the sword so that we can hit a specific audience. You all can do the same thing with your branded content, right? Instead of trying to put out the piece that will appeal to the most people, think about it in terms of, I'm going to create it this way to appeal to these people, this way to appeal to those people, and then put it where they are. And if you do those two things, if that's going to be our strategy going forward, I think you'll find a big audience.
But how do brands then come to you and say, I don't want to just do branded content? I don't just want to sponsor something. I want to partner with you in a different way.
I don't just want to blast my ads on
I want to go co-produce. What does that look like in this new world where IP is focused?
It's very difficult. And there is a line between the newsroom and advertising, and the line is very simple. We make our decisions based on journalistic reasons, not financial reasons. So once you get a marketer into that conversation, it can become very tricky. Is it impossible? No. We've seen a lot of things in the past few years that work fine, satisfying both sides of the wall, but you do have to be careful. And we need brands and marketers and agencies to be respectful of the fact that this is what we do, and this is the single most important thing in our industry, is the fact that we make decisions based on journalism. If that were to falter, if we were seen as making decisions based for financial reasons and doing stories because a marketer wants us to do it, our industry is gone in 5 minutes.
What if a brand said, listen, I feel like I have IP, you have IP, let's combine, let's go create a product together?
So we've tried a couple different things in that space. We love it in the hardware space. So if you are a technology company that is building hardware, we'd love to be able to take your hardware and then use it for journalistic purposes and tell a really cool story. We had a very long, drawn-out conversation with a major hardware producer last year, about 10 months, about actually taking something that they were building, taking it to the space station for journalistic reasons and being able to tell a story that way. That didn't happen, didn't quite work out, but I think there are partnership opportunities where it can work, but we got to be very careful.
I'm in 100% agreement, and I've evolved a lot on this. I've pushed many editors hard on not to say a nice thing about a client, but this is years ago. Not certainly recently, but on topics. Like, doesn't it make sense to cover this topic? I have a marketer that wants to sponsor it. Even that is dangerous. And I would never think to try to influence in any way anything that the Washington Post is going to do from a journalistic perspective. I sell ads next to their stuff.
I mean, I don't know. That's why you have a brand studio.
Yeah. And that's why, exactly, we have a brand studio. And very importantly, it has to be transparent of where the content is coming from.
Yep.
It needs to be labeled clearly what it is.
So this drives us.
But I also think
you got to remember. So one point of information: the biggest complaint we get in the newsroom is when we do not label stories correctly as opinion or analysis. This drives readers nuts. Mm-hmm. And we might think that a label is a UX negative. I think it actually is a UX signal that is helpful.
Agree. We got to have
there
it.
Has to be
right?
a distinction. But
there
the
has
way,
to be a distinction.
You just said it drives you crazy.
No, because
the focus isn't. Here's the thing. It drives her crazy because that's all there is, right? People are coming to the table and still saying, I want a 300 by 250. With a label, right?
Right, and it'll have this badge and
this different color. Is that you asked about UX yesterday, which I thought was the smart, and we just talked about this, which is such a smart question. And the answer back to you was, Washington Post, we need you to lead the way.
Right.
Right? We need you to tell us what's available. How do we do this?
So I think we need to redefine the paradigm, right? We haven't changed the fundamental framework of the article page since 1998, when the web first started.
That's
right?
What I think that, is
that's
awful
what we're
to
talking
clarify.
About. Yeah.
So we have not made that change. But it is a very difficult thing for us to change in the newsroom because we have these conversations where somebody in our newsroom will go to Jed and say, you know what, man, this article really looks great without any ads on it. Can we just take the ads off, take the banner off, and it would look really cool? And Jed will say, well, you can't do that. that, you know, we need that revenue. So my people get frustrated. He gets frustrated about the question. You know, we missed an amazing opportunity with the iPad, in my opinion. That was where we all should have said, you know what, stop the shit. Let's come up with an entirely new way of doing this. Let's not make it feel like an interruption. Let's create a whole new flow. And I think we blew it.
I think there's more opportunities now.
There's plenty of opportunity, and that's what Jared's team is developing with many of the new ad units that are options for marketers that lend to UX, that are light, fast, and capture attention. However, if for some reason, if a 300 by 250, if an agency and a marketer want to invest money in it because it works for their business,
I'm not
going to tell them not to. Now, there is an inherent problem with the creation of digital advertising. It's the only medium that was really built on the fractional ad, first of all.
That's right.
Every other medium, a 30-second spot gets the exact same palette that the directors of the show gets.
Sure.
Right? A magazine, everyone gets the same, the editor, the advertisers get the same thing. But the advent of the internet, the editors take all the good stuff, and what they don't want, they toss the advertiser, and that's how ads were created, and that's a problem.
What a lot of the issue is what sits with inside that 300 by 250.
It's what you do with it.
And what you do with it, and how marketers can work with publishers to understand platform by platform, technology by technology, how they can take the best of what they have to bring to an audience with the needs and the desires of the people coming to the post and create time spent.
But this is such a critical conversation to have now because of the distributed platform.
That's right.
Right. So
totally
we can
right.
create a great experience. Let's say we solve the problem on WashingtonPost.com. That's great. But when then I send out that article to Apple News, to Facebook Instant, to Google AMP, all those ads get stripped away, and we're starting the game all over again. You know, we had a great conversation with Apple News. We were creating these beautiful projects, and then we were sending them to Apple News, and they just looked like shit. So we went to them, and we said, look at what you're producing, and look at what we're producing. And we expected them to push back. We expected them to say, you know, we don't really care. We just want the feed of content. We know better than you. Apple News said, you know what, come to Cupertino. Come to Cupertino, sit down with our designers, and let's try to solve this problem. These are the conversations we have to have with the Facebook. You know, Facebook Instant is great. It's fast. It's fast because the only thing they're loading is the article. They're not loading ad units. They're not doing all the other stuff that actually slows the page down. That's not solving the problem.
When you're starting...
Garçon? Sorry, go ahead. Are we filling up glasses here or not?
Well,
I don't want some damn cooties. Thank you.
Look at this service.
Look at this.
Joseph, takes so damn long. Thank you so much. Thank you. Please don't let that happen again. Employee evaluation season. That's going to go on everybody's list.
If you're starting a business from scratch, you don't have certain legacy ties. There's a newspaper company inside legacy digital companies, and it's called the 300 by 250, right? It's a declining legacy medium that you can watch, you can look at these enormous digital companies that have been around for a long time that are doing great in native, social, programmatic, but their business is declining. Why? Because they have this legacy business inside them. And it does make it hard. You can't just shut it down. You don't want to. You want the money.
Can't.
So that's what you try to improve those units. You try to educate your marketing partners.
But that's a two-way conversation.
Yeah, right?
I think a lot of people
don't
think, Laura, Alexa, you hate programmatic. You hate, these. We don't have an issue with efficiency. There are certain brands who need scale. They need to get into certain places and certain mindsets and certain behaviors quickly. But how we utilize that space has to change.
I 100%
but it's also
agree.
We have to ask you for something else.
It's on both of us.
Can we say that again?
No, we do. We have to ask for something else. And I will tell you that some of the best ideas that we have done with you guys was we came to the table.
Right.
We said, no RFP. We know what you're good at, right? We have respect for who you are. How can we build something together?
Together.
That's it.
Period.
It was truly that. And then we would sit in a room for hours and just...
Grind it out.
Grind it. I mean, just bang on it.
I agree with everything you guys are saying. It has to be a partnership. The important thing is that the brand recognizes that we know the audience well, and we're going to make recommendations so your content performs best. And that can be very hard if a brand wants to stick to a certain type of content. And that's what they're very close to that content, but we're saying
that's not going to
that may not resonate. Yeah. And then there's a KPI to hit.
Yeah. So I'd love this is my challenge to the both of you is to come to the next meeting we have, and instead of it being a deck about your comm score and reach numbers, the different verticals you have, et cetera, tell me what your audience needs and why I can help that conversation.
That's right. Right?
I'll come with that. You guys come with the
yes.
IO.
Done. We're getting head nods.
Forever the salesman. So we do.
But
we
you
do
have to say no. You have to say no when they when people are asking you for 300 by 250.
That doesn't say going. No to IOs.
No. I, well,
you say no, but. Listen to this.
Here's what we do say no
and.
Yes, that's true. I want the IO and the space is the client's space. The space I can recommend. I can say this will work better. But if the client wants to run something, as long as it's not offensive.
I think all clients want to know what problems we can solve for our audiences.
They want to stand out.
There's efficiencies at
the
end
of the day. I agree. But if the more you understand the audience and what their needs are, the better you're going to stand out.
You're very forward thinking.
Let me ask you one thing. What is most important to you guys? Is it having the splash and making the impact, or respecting the time and the needs of maybe the person who doesn't want to buy a car today?
Yeah, I mean, I think
we should ask them.
We can, I love
I
mean, to get, like, there's I wanna, a lot of brand like, marketers in the audience.
We can answer, but I want to hear from
any
someone
brand,
else.
Anybody that has an opinion on that?
I think the obvious answer is we want to respect the reader. We want to respect your editorial relationship with those folks, but we want to track what is eventually happening with that person. So, no, we don't want to have this big disruptive experience. Every smart marketer in the world wants to get away from that, yep. right? And to respect what you guys are doing with them. But we need to find a way to understand what really is happening.
That's
how
right.
are we connecting with them? If you're saying we're not making an instant sale, so how are we successful there? That's where we really could use you guys to work with.
So I would sum that up as attribution, right? Like we can't, we actually, so digital is trackable, digital is traceable. But you ask any brand marketer and you say, did this really move the ROI, right? Did it move the needle for you? They're going to hem and haw and say, well, we did this, and we found this causal relationship. Am I right?
Digital is trackable, yes. And that is a great thing about digital, and it's a poor thing about digital. There was I wanted a Porsche when I was 15. It meant something to me. I wanted it. I had no money and I had no driver's license. Two things you need.
The ideal customer.
Right. 30
Give
years
ago. Your click is so
Give
important to them. Go ahead.
Give
them
more.
There was no such thing as the internet back then.
Oh,
30 years later.
You got your Porsche.
I got one. A used one, but I got one. Go follow my clickstream. It's just not happening. There has to be a comfort that some waste is okay to develop brand. And not everything has to be targeted work down the funnel. There has to be some comfort. The old saying, I know half my advertising works, I just don't know what half.
So I actually, when I talk to partners, I don't say, I do say, okay, how are we attributing some of this stuff? How are we looking at it? But I put the onus on me to think about completely different metrics to what I'm trying to do. What I'm saying to you, what I think is really interesting is a new conversation with publisher and brand to say, think about it maybe like this. And we'll see. Come with us.
We are.
Right?
We're open to that conversation. Our Article Next project. We will go anywhere. We'll go on the road. You know, Joey travels well.
Only if you have margaritas.
To Cancun, to Miami.
Right. It'll have to be a nice place. But I do think, though, that the frustration too is the one-off solution. So we'll see a solution that you guys come up with, or people in this room are really creative come up with, and we're like, God, this is really cool. And then we don't see anything like that again for months.
So maybe I put a challenge out to the marketer side of this and the agency side of this, because also we run generalizing on campaign cycles. That's why we're fair weather. When you say I saw it, it was great, and then I never saw it again.
That's right.
Right?
We're doing flight
data. So maybe we have to
okay.
change the conversation. It's about building audience over time.
Right, and having a consistent relationship.
And having a consistent relationship. So I think, I mean, I take that on for all of us,
but
marketers.
If you came up with a great ad unit and a great idea that ran in a campaign, are there other people out just to steal that idea and copy it and do it themselves?
I hope they do if it works.
Yeah, I hope they do. I agree with that.
So rarely do we let you have the last word, but we will.
But we're going to.
This is what we call the last tweet. How has technology changed your career personally for better or for worse?
Okay, let me answer that one. It's without a doubt changed it for the better because it's so exciting and so fun. It's ever changing, and there's an unlimited amount of possibilities that you can create within. And so I think because of that, you can only be excited about technology and as it relates to digital, as opposed to analog.
Yep.
What I would also say is that
it's only 140 characters.
I know, I was just gonna say.
Well, you can edit it down.
Can.
Yeah, the other thing I would say in my next tweet would be
all right, Donald, go ahead. You, holy shit.
I and I
amazing.
Alone can fix this.
Right.
No, what I would say is what I would say is that if you feel your new school and you're thinking today, it's sort of a blank slate tomorrow. It doesn't mean your new school tomorrow, right? So every day you
that's right.
you have to keep learning. Because that's just true. So you can feel like, wow, I'm ahead of the curve right now. You could wake up tomorrow and be so far behind.
Don't stop, get it. You could have just said that.
Don't stop, get it.
With a fire sign and 100 after it.
There you go. Hashtag what's up.
Emilio, how about you?
Hashtag what's up. So what we do is we tell stories. So I'm a storyteller. Technology is the paint. It's the ink. It's the pencil. It's how we tell the story. And because the more it evolves and the more you embrace the evolution, the more colors you have to paint with. It's really that simple.
Thank you, Picasso.
I like your palette.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you for joining us in Atlanta. We hope you had fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Cheers.
So that was spicy.
Spicy. Third episode. Last question. Who runs the world?
Girls.
Girls.
So... Atlandia, I have something really special that I've been working on. We're talking about industry events. I'm actually working on one with the ladies of SheRunsIt.org.
Who runs it?
She runs it. To put on one of the hottest lineups I've seen in quite a long time, featuring women in marketing and advertising, talk about everything from communications to experiential data and definitely women's content. Check out the lineup on SheRunsIt.org. Tickets available now. We'll see you out there on March 29th.
I'm excited.
It's going to be awesome.
Amazing.
But anyhow, here we are, episode 3. Make sure you subscribe, download, and definitely follow us on Atlandia Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
As always, we'd like to thank our family at Panoply, Cameron Drews, Laura Mayer, Andy Bowers, and our secret EP, Matt Turk.
Thanks for joining us this week in Atlandia. We'll be back in 2 Tuesdays with an all-new episode.
Talk soon.
Bye. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.